This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Coming up is Pack Told You, Leonard Hamilton, bottom of the hour, and in case you missed it, with Tony Elliott. We start the 8 o'clock hour, however, with Dabo Swinney yesterday confirming what had been speculated on defensive coordinator promotion, and that is Wes Goodwin. Pack, who was an analyst for a defensive assistant slash analyst, I guess, had worked for Bruce Arians of the Cardinals, had come back to work for Dabo the last couple of years, and is considered a guy who was kind of the secret sauce maybe for what Brent Venables was doing the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know him personally, so there's not much I can add here. I'm not surprised at all that Dabo went in-house. I said this the other day to Tony Elliott, when you have unbelievable success like Dabo's had with his staff, he is all about the culture. It's mm-hmm. all about, hey, guys that fit what we do, what his vision is for the program. Hard to argue with his success now. It's been crazy good. And you know what? He didn't have to look far to find what he thought was the right fit,
right,
the culture. And he went right down the hallway and said, you, let's go. Let's rock. Yep. And that's what he did.
So senior defensive assistant Wes Goodwin will move to the defensive coordinator role. Safeties coach Mickey Kahn, who was former teammate of Dabo's at Alabama, incredibly successful high school coach in Georgia at Grayson, will take on a co-defensive coordinator's role. Goodwin will be the primary play caller on defense, replacing Brent Venables. So that's one piece of the Clemson coaching puzzle. The other piece involves quarterbacks coach Brandon Streeter, who's being elevated to offensive coordinator. In addition, Kyle Richardson is now going to move into an on-field role as a tight ends coach and pass game coordinator. Goodwin is going to coach the linebackers and was given a 3-year deal and will earn $850,000 annually. Kahn will make $800,000 a year. This will be Goodwin's first on-field coaching assignment. Streeter, of course, is a former Clemson quarterback, as folks know. He got a 3-year deal and make $925,000 annually. Kyle Richardson, great high school coach in the state of South Carolina, played at Appalachian State, as I recall, for Jerry Moore. He's going to make $500,000 annually on a 2-year deal.
So they kept it in-house from a recruiting perspective, and Clemson's expected to sign a really small class based on numbers. I'm going to talk to Dabo later this afternoon. Kind of curious to see what Clemson's numbers are at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of schools, the transfer portal has hit them hard. Dabo, for the most part, has refrained from partaking. I think that's probably going to have to change. But I'm kind of curious to see where Clemson's numbers are at the end of the day. They're expected, like I said, to sign a small class headlined by Cade Klubnik, who is supposed to be the next big thing from a quarterback standpoint,
right,
player out of Texas. So we'll see. Like everything else when it comes to recruiting, once you get on campus, we'll find out who can compete, who wants to play, who wants to get better.
All right. Here is Coach Swinney talking to the media yesterday about these promotions on his staff.
Man, Brandon Streeter, that's a no-brainer. Street actually has been a coordinator for multiple years, but prior to coming here, and he left being a coordinator to come in and coach the quarterbacks and then passing game coordinator. And, man, what a great job he's done. A great job coaching, teaching, evaluating. Unbelievable job Deshaun Watson's last 2 years. And then recruiting Trevor, developing Trevor. He's just done an amazing job. So he's over-prepared for this opportunity and deserves it. He's turned down, you know, there's so many things that people don't know, but he's turned down multiple NFL jobs. He had an opportunity to coordinate in NFL last year. He's had multiple SEC coordinator jobs all over. But he stayed right here and he stayed patient. And this is his time and his opportunity, and I'm excited for him. Kyle Richardson. So y'all remember, local media, y'all remember 6 years ago I wanted a high school perspective in our staff room. And so I went and hired two of the best in the country. You know, I hired Kyle Richardson from Northwestern, who multiple state championships and just unbelievable, coaching Mason Rudolph and Cordell Patterson and you know, all them dudes, Logan Rudolph and all. And then I went and hired this guy named Mickey Kahn, who started the Grayson program, like literally built the stadium and coached – head coach there for 15, 16, however many years. And, man, I brought them in. and knew what they would bring to our staff, and then also knew at some point we'd get them on the field. And just this is, we had an opportunity with a 10th assistant to get Mickey on there a little earlier. And just haven't, as y'all know, we hadn't had a lot of transition, hadn't had a lot of change. So this was a great opportunity to finally be able to get, and Kyle's been patient. Kyle's turned down multiple jobs. He's turned down coordinator jobs. He's turned down quarterback jobs to stay at Clemson because this was his dream. And, man, he's earned it. He deserves it. He is so freaking fired up.
I'm not surprised with the hires, to be honest with
right.
you. I did think it was kind of funny, though, that he was asked about Brent Venables and Tony Elliott getting gigs. And he said, you know, my coaching tree used to be just a twig. Now I got a couple branches. So that's all part of it. You know, that's part of when you have a successful organization that people from the outside are going like, hey, how do we figure this out? What's the secret sauce there?
Mm-hmm.
It's always the people. So at some point in time, you knew there was going to be a transition with Clemson staff in it, and that's what we are.
All right. So all these promotions in-house, that fills his card. I think that the speculation was that when Brent Venables left, the last time he went and got a defensive coordinator, he went out, right?
Yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Right. So I think that that was still kind of in the minds of some folks. And while you're at it and you're going to go look at an offense and the offense struggled, are you going to look out? I think that's the other side of the house in terms of thought.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, here's how I saw it, that Clemson, to their benefit mm-hmm. and all their success, could have done that. I mean, there's no doubt if Dabo said, hey, I'm going to put this out for bids, if you will. Who would be interested in being my defensive coordinator? Who'd be interested in being my offensive coordinator?
Right.
He'd have a laundry list of 200 names of really incredible guys around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But his mindset is, hey, the answer is down the hallway.
Right.
So I think that if you look at the way he's put together a program after, 13 years at Clemson?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of hard to argue that this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have gone that route, but he said, no, I'm going to go this way. Because that guy I've been working with, who's been on the recruiting trail for me, he is the right guy here. And so, like I said, I'm not surprised at all
right.
that he stayed in-house. Could he have gone outside? Sure he did. Mm-hmm. But I think he even mentioned the press conference, he never looked at anybody
right.
outside. This was a really kind of an easy call for him. So I would say, given his track record, man, you say, you know what, coach, you're the man. Go for it.
All right. The coaching carousel now kind of comes underneath. You know, the head coaches move, and some have moved around signing day, and who knows, maybe there's one or two left on the bigger line, right? Now you start to plug and play all the assistants and coordinators, even on National Signing Day. Why is that a big deal? Because typically if the assistants are going to move, and look, we got Elko, Cristobal, Tony Elliott in the ACC alone, so you're going to see assistants at certain places be on the move here within the next 72 hours, potentially to an ACC school, right?
We saw it today.
Well, here's the story. There is a report this morning that Adam Rittenberg, citing sources, that Kenny Dillingham is leaving Mike Norvell's staff. The offensive coordinator of the Seminoles apparently is going to join Dan Lanning as the offensive coordinator of the Oregon Ducks. Remember, Lanning, the Georgia defensive coordinator, is Oregon's new coach. If Dillingham leaves Norvell's staff, that ties in, by the way, Mike Norvell got a one-year extension on the back end of his deal yesterday, that now Dan Lanning takes Kenny Dillingham. You say, well, what's the connection? Well, the connection goes all the way back to, like, Arizona State and to Memphis with Kenny Dillingham and Dan Lanning. Mike Norvell got his one-year extension, but now may be looking for a new offensive coordinator. Does he promote from within like Dabo Swinney? Does he go someplace else? That also brings me to a David Hale tweet. David's done some quick research this morning. He said if Dillingham leaves for Oregon, the only ACC teams who won't have either a new OC or DC in 2022 will be Boston College, Louisville, Carolina, NC State, or Wake Forest. So it is a transitive year in the ACC in some respects.
It is, but it's always that way. I mean, there's always movement. I mean, what we saw with Dabo and his staff, given their success,
right.
is very unusual. I mean, it is really unusual because normally whoever the hot team is,
mm-hmm.
guess what happens? hey, let's go hire their offensive coordinator. Let's go hire their defensive coordinator. He's the next big thing, right? It's just the nature of the beast. You want to steal from the folks who've had the most success. So that doesn't surprise me at all, Wes. It happens all the time.
By the way, Mike Norvell, just to let you know about the math on this, always tricky for me, Pac. Mike Norvell signed a 6-year deal when he got the Florida State job. So what they've essentially done is add a 7th year to the original contract.
And we've talked about it. You know, I thought Mike Norvell and I thought Manny Diaz, I'll throw him in here. I know he's now the defensive coordinator at Penn State. I thought both those gentlemen at their respective institutions in the second half of the year did a terrific job keeping it together. Because both of those schools could have gone right into the trash can at the midway point of the season. Easy.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So that's, to me, that's good coaching.
I think the disappointment for Norvell is that the Florida game, they didn't get that done because I think that would have gotten them to a postseason.
Right.
And it felt like Florida State needed that. I'm not going to say they didn't need the bowl practice, but they would have liked to welcome that kind of environment.
And you want to beat your in-state rival.
Yeah, well, that's
and the Gators were a total train wreck going into it. And, you know, going back, I thought they were going to win that game. And did not. So that's why we keep score.
Florida State 5-7 this year. Mike Norvell, a 1-year extension. Before we get to break and we get to more recruiting, a happy birthday today, right here midstream. The Great Scott, as Bill Curry once called him. Charlie Scott turns 73 today. A landmark player in the Atlantic Coast Conference. First black scholarship athlete at North Carolina. 22 points, 7 rebounds a game, and a career best 27.1 in his senior year. 2-time All-America, 3-time All-ACC. Carolina had their 2nd and 3rd consecutive NCAA Final Four appearances under Charlie Scott, the Great Scott, 1968-1969.
Need to bring those unis back.
Yeah, they do. Those things are nice, aren't they?
Those are sweet. I'm telling you, that's was the deal.
Can we roll that one more time just so we can get a look at those satin blues and whites, huh?
Those were sweet.
How about Coach Smith and Rusty Clark and Charlie Scott running off the floor? Look at those. That's like the jersey we got in the –
back there. Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Strong. Yep. There's Franklin, Rusty Clark. I think that's Reynolds Coliseum they're running off the floor in. Oh, look at the big oval.
Those right there.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I'm talking about.
And they had the – remember they wore the sanitary socks with the numbers on them?
I think that's a sweet look right there. You know, we're the last
– oh, we are. The last people.
I won't even throw you on the bus. I'll throw myself under the bus. I'm the last guy on the planet Earth that should talk about fashion.
Right.
Because this is dressed up for me, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But those are sweet.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, I hope that fashion, you know, always goes in cycles, right? Mm-hmm. I hope we get back to that.
Well, short shorts are coming back. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Well, I don't need that. That doesn't do a whole lot for me. But, you know, men wearing fedoras every day going out, that'd be a sweet look now.
Going to the game in coat and tie?
I don't know about the coat and tie.
I figured.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, National Signing Day. Take a look back to kind of prepare you for today. Of course, the boys from the huddle tonight at 6 p.m. will have you covered looking back at everybody. Again, everybody gets better today on National Signing Day. But
That's right.
Always fun, Wes, to kind of look back the last couple years and who was a 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star that ended up breaking through and really got the job done.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to look at numbers, too, when the day gets done. Coaching changes, portal, extra year of eligibility. The math, as we said at the top of the show today, gets a little muddy, to be honest with you. And Luges will be here on Friday with Pack, and you guys can talk about all the intricacies of this. I think it's a fascinating discussion, too, about how schools, if they ever get back to balanced recruiting classes, how does it happen? Because it used to be a thing a decade ago. You know that. They wanted to sign 22, 22, 23, 21, something like that in 4 consecutive years to keep it balanced. I'm not sure you can do it anymore with the portal and all these other things.
Unless you're lucky.
Yeah. But one of the things we did in the first hour is look back at the 17, 18 classes to see where some players were ranked on signing day. Well, let's move forward here to 19. Because in 2019, we're talking about guys who are factors right now in the ACC who were 3 stars. 3 of them Zay Flowers that three-star guy?
Gosh.
I mean, how about Ike Ekwonu?
Going to be any good? Going to be first
round? I can tell you where he's going to be first 10? At something. You know where he's going to be first at something?
In the
April.
Round. Yeah, first round. He'll be an 10 pick, yeah. If not better.
Oh, Drake Thomas? Really?
You know, I let me just stop right there. How many times have we seen an NC State logo looking back at these three-star guys here? We started in 2017, 2018, now we're doing 2019.
Right.
I'm going to go back and make another point.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Dorn. And we showed you what the 2017 class was ranked and all that stuff, and it was in the 50s, 51 to be exact. Look at these guys that he signed, and now you find out, man, that Drake Thomas, he's really a good player.
Yep.
Kwanu, man, he's going to be a first-round pick. NC State's been on here a bunch
yep.
on this three-star deal.
Sure have.
That's good coaching.
How about Kalijah Cansey and Servacier Dennis? Remember, Servacier told us that some people wanted him as a quarterback. They didn't want him as a linebacker.
Servacier.
How about that, right?
Love it.
So, there's a list of guys, and you see their accomplishments. Nick Jackson, he's been one of the best tacklers in the ACC the last couple of years. Dontavian Wicks has been a stud.
Three-time winner of the Wide Receiver U Award this
yep,
year.
Exactly. Let's go to the four stars. Now, these names are more well-known. We know Sam Howell now. Come on. Sam Howell, you just thought he was a five-star. Probably.
Every one of these guys are big time. And, again, not five stars, four-star players.
Right.
And you expect when you sign a four-star guy, the chances of that person having a real impact is probably pretty good. With that list right there, Andrew Booth, Tyler Davis, Kel Jones, Sam Howell, let me tell you something now. Dude. Those are Sunday guys.
Yep.
All of them.
Yep. Well, it gets better. It gets real good. Let's go to 20 because there are 2 3 stars that we need to show you here.
Sean Tucker.
Sean Tucker, three star.
What a
deal
that was.
Come on, 1,500 yards, 12 scores, led the ACC in rushing. Izzy Abanikanda's just getting started, gang. And I mean just getting started. Michigan State, you might want to find him. In the Peach Bowl on the 30th.
Well, Tucker's the one that pops here because he had such a phenomenal year. And I remember how many times we have Dino on the show this year during the football season and just said, hey, you know, at what point in time did you know?
Right.
And he said, oh, we knew. And this year was the breakout.
Yep.
Right. I mean, when you go back and look at all the preseason ACC first team running backs, you can
Mateo
find
Durant.
Those. You
right
can find Sean Tucker.
Yep.
And lo and behold, the boys up there at Syracuse found a gem, no question.
And you know what? I just think about Jashaun Corbin, Sean Tucker. I mean, just the way this year unfolded and what that's going to look like. And then what about British Brooks the last night of the year, the last night of the regular season? He's coming
NC
back
State.
Too. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, so it's going to get really interesting. All right, let's go to the four stars here. there's a national award winner on here, Pac. A national award winner.
But I'm emphasizing again, with a four-star player, you got to like your chances that he is going to have an impact on your team.
Yeah.
And the 2 and 3 stars, you're like, well, we'll see who develops out of this. But the four-star guy, you expect good things to happen.
Right. And so when you get to the fours, is it a year away? Is it immediate? You don't know. In the case of Tyler Van Dyke of Miami, it occurred in a way it had to happen. There was an injury involved. De'Aaron King, right? Kid got a lot of reps in the spring, and King got hurt again. Next thing you know, Tyler Van Dyke he's not going anywhere. That guy's there.
Well, we talked about Miami in the summertime after watching their spring game that you expected De'Aaron King to be back, and he was. Unfortunately,
right.
He got hurt again. But when you watch the Miami spring game a year ago, man, you're like, man, that quarterback room is pretty impressive. Garcia looks good. TVD looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all playing behind De'Aaron King. And, of course, King's injury set the scene for a TVD to arrive, and boy, did he take an opportunity and say, guess what? I can play. And the hype around him heading into 22 is going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. The 2 top wide receivers in the Atlantic Coast Conference were also 4-star recruits in 2020. One being Josh Downs, of course, who ended up having a phenomenal year for North Carolina. So Downs was a guy that you look at him and say, wow, okay. He emerged because we had Ja'Cory Roberson and Jordan Addison as our first team guys probably in the preseason. Downs exploded onto the scene in the first half of the campaign. And then the other was Addison, four-star guy out of Maryland who, you know, had a great freshman season, was a freshman All-America, but got banged up a little bit. And this year, he went crazy.
Well, everything kind of happened perfecto for Pitt, didn't they? I mean, Kenny Pickett comes back, kind of sets the scene to allow guys like Addison to have a guy who can deliver the goods.
Yep.
They stayed relatively healthy for the most part, considering what some other teams went through.
Yep.
And again, he's just a great talent and good for Pitt. They are the ACC champs, and he's one of the reasons why, because he is a matchup nightmare.
Yep, sure is. So that's a look at the 19 and 20 classes. So it gives you an idea kind of where things fall here as we get to National Signing Day.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday, National Signing Day. A lot of football talk already. We got hoops as well. We got all kinds of good stuff. And what I said to you today, our two live guests are Leonard Hamilton and Dave Clawson. They have something in common, and that is they are the leaders in Packer and Durham appearances for men's basketball and football. Today will be their 11th appearance on the program as leaders in the clubhouse. So
yeah,
here's the coach who always leaves us with, you know, you boys need to put me on more often. You don't give me enough exposure. So I just want to get out in front of that parade, making his 11th appearance more than any other ACC basketball coach in the league. This guy right here, Leonard Hamilton. Coach, first of all, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and congratulations. You're the new leader in the clubhouse.
Oh my goodness! How can I? What can I say? I'm about to break out in tears.
I know better.
Well, we just took something off your plate because obviously, as you know, now that you're the leader in the basketball clubhouse and Packer and Durham appearances, you can't say y'all don't have me on enough. That's the bottom line,
well,
right?
You're right. You know, I'm gonna have to stop complaining. I got to find something else to complain about.
How about this? Let's win a game, Coach. What's going on down here in Tallahassee?
How about now? Come on, Leonard. He can't do that.
Forget about the holiday wishings now. Listen, I've been bragging about your boys. What are we doing? We got to get some W's, man. What's going on down there in Tallahassee?
Well, this is the kind of the biggest challenge that we've had in the last number of years. And now understand what it's like. You know, we've been pretty old. I mean, when we had Devin Vassell, he was the only freshman that we integrated into our system. And then we had Patrick Williams. He was one of a few freshmen that we worked in. And now, and Scotty Barnes last year, obviously, he was the only real freshman that played significant minutes. Now, it's the reverse now. You know, I have four guys returning, Wyatt Wilson and Evans and Osborne and Polite. Those guys now are my veterans, and they're stepping up into different roles where they have been kind of role players or support players. Now they're the guys who drive the car. And then I've never had a situation where, like some of the other teams around the country, where we looked up and you've had five first-year players on the floor, you know, for half the game. It's interesting that we've led in most of the games that we've lost. We've had led at halftime, or been very close, with the exception of Purdue. And We have faltered in the second half. A lot of us experienced. A lot of us as new guys accepting different roles, and we kind of in that part of your program where you're rebooting, regenerating, regrouping, and it's challenging for us. When I looked up there, it looked up and saw, gosh, when I go back and watch the films and see, I have all new players out on the court, and I'm. It's kind of a new situation for us, but I like the team. I like the potential of our young kids. I do believe that our veterans will step up, and we kind of in that mode where, because of how many kids we've had that moved on early, we're a lot younger than I would like to be, and somehow or another we gotta fix that.
I see seven guys on the, I see 10 guys on the stat sheet playing 10 minutes or more a ball game. How much of this is in-game evaluation of combinations? How much of it are you able to get done in practices? And then I'll finish the thought with this. I would imagine with a young team like you're talking about, this area between semesters during the holidays, it seemed like a pretty important time for the development of your team.
No doubt about that. There are times during games where some guys just don't recognize. I think the other night at South Carolina, we were up 16 the first half, and they went to a zone defense. And I looked out, and they had four first-year guys out there, and we lost our rhythm, understandably, but that's where leadership comes in. Mm-hmm. But it's hard sometimes to lead when you got guys trying to learn how to follow. But this is who we are. You know, we all go through these types of situations, and for us, you know, this is – something that we hadn't had to deal with in a while, because we've redshirted some guys and we seem to have been found a way to say older, more mature and experienced. Coach, but I do believe, though, that this, what we're going through now, hopefully will prepare us to be a lot stronger once we get the ACC play.
Yeah, I was going to go there with you too, Coach. You know, the whole mental toughness and physical toughness, especially with a young team, does take time. That's not one of those things you get necessarily into practice. You got to get pushed down and kicked around a little bit in real games until you find out who really wants to get up and compete, don't you?
No doubt about that. I did a video the other day for our team of this, the enthusiasm and the excitement and the passionate expressions that some of our guys have had in our program, where they wanted it and they're so proud and they're so determined. That you could just see it in their eyes and see it in their facial expressions. And there are times when I look at my team now, I look and their eyes are wide, but they're trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do? You know, as opposed to playing with the level of confidence that sometimes comes with just a little bit more experience. But we all go through this. We haven't been in this situation for a while. And as coaches, we have to make sure we adjust, be more patient, more demanding, hold players more accountable. And just keep pushing, keep working and drilling, and normally it all comes together at some point.
All right, I want to ask you about your experience, and the most experienced piece on your roster is Malik Osborne, a guy who has contributed in so many different ways since he's arrived on campus. How valuable is that commodity right now at this particular time in the season for your team?
Well, Malik is our best perimeter shooter, but we're playing him in our five position, if you go and give a guy a position. We won the ACC, I think, tournament. We played regular season with him playing the five, but I had two seven-footers backing him up, which means we could play him at the five, some and some at the four. Now, because of the inexperience and losing to Noy on the GOM, now he's put in a position where now – we're moving him to the position, and we're moving two freshmen into the lineup. Obviously, it was a little challenging with – we lost Evans there for two or three games and with the death of his brother. And so now, all of a sudden, we have two freshmen starting, and I'm not real sure we've had that. We've been in that position since we had Malik Beasley and Dwayne Baker.
Coach, yesterday we talked to Mike Bray, and I asked him the question about – I know you worry about your team first, and you got 1,000 things to deal with. He's got an older team. You got a younger team. But have you taken a sample of where the conference is as we sit here in the middle of December? Have you spent any time just kind of looking at the league and going, hey, what are we doing here? What's going on left and right? Just curious.
To be honest with you, I spent all my time concerning ourselves with the Seminoles. I really have not had a chance to watch very many other teams play. It's just keeping my nose focused on what the task we have at hand. But I do expect it to be similar. The league has changed where it's going to be a dogfight. You know, I think you can expect this to be another rock'em sock'em year. I do feel that Duke and Carolina might be ahead of most of us. I think North Carolina, in my impression, I can't talk, I don't want to speak too much about their program, but I thought they were very young last year. They brought in two very good transfers, and those guys last year who got some experience, and they look very dangerous the times I've watched them play. Duke has a few guys back, but they have a couple of – I've got one of the top two or three players in the country, that I think that's really shaping their team. But those two teams look like to me, they are a little ahead of most of the rest of us in the league. But like always, it doesn't really matter when they throw the ball up. The number one team and the number 10 team is still going to be a battle, and you got to be ready to play every night in the ACC or something bad happen to you.
All right, so you're joining us on game day. Your team plays late night tonight against Lipscomb right here on ACC Network.
That's an important call.
You know when you hear the piano, that's a big call.
That's a tune that you better pay attention to.
The piano
Coach.
Is a big call. That's not just your average call. That might be the house.
Yeah, that wasn't a Packer Durham on the line, too. No, that was somebody
that
important.
That was really important. Here's my question. If you're prospecting these next five, which feature two conference games at the back end, road trip to Boston College, road trip to NC State, how important is this little stretch of the season for you, Leonard?
Well, now, we're playing three straight road games at Boston College, at North Carolina State, and then at Wake Forest in our league. Well, that's that's very interesting, I believe. Very, very much so. we're in a very important stretch with the game tonight. UCF, you know, who went down and beat Miami at Miami.
Yep.
North Florida. And then we go on the road for, I believe that's three games, correct?
That is three right there. We're looking at them. Yeah, three in a row. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a very important stretch for us. And we got to improve fast. We need to win our non-conference game to finish that out. Obviously, to be in better position for postseason. And then we're going on the road to win three games on the road. And you know as well as I do, being on the road in the ACC is challenging. So this is probably the toughest stretch that we will have with the type of team that we have now, trying to regroup, trying to gain some experience and win games and needing our experienced guys to step up and our new guys to accelerate the learning process.
Hey, Coach, what'd you do to those folks up there at the ACC office that have three straight road games like that a week? Well, what'd you do to those folks up there?
Oh, boy.
Well, hey, listen, fellas, you know, sometimes I imagine we all go through those scenarios at some point in time when you're in the ACC. And, you know, that's the luck of the draw, I guess you might say, but we got to play them, so we might as well get them out of the way.
Hey, that's some truth in that.
How about
I'm not going to complain about it. You know, that's the schedule. It's not going to change between now and next week. So the thing I need to do is just get busy and try to be prepared to play the schedule.
I got to tell you, there is some strong diplomacy being employed by the legendary head coach of the Seminoles right there, because you do have three home games behind the three road games. Is that right? I mean, it does check out pretty quick in the balance sheet, right?
But Durham, I'm going to explain this to you. I'm a next game guy. I'm taking one day at a time. Now, hey, listen, what you explained to me, I got to go back and check, make sure you're correct. Because I don't get too far ahead of myself. I don't have the luxury of getting past Lipscomb. With the team that I have right now, I can't worry about those three in a row. I got to worry about what's going to happen the night at 9 o'clock.
All right. Well, let me just lay it on line for you here. You got three in a row, State, Wake, Louisville. Then you go, well, you do get Miami at home, and then
He just told you he's only worried about Lipscomb. Why are you bothering the man for about middle of
January? Well, I'm telling him at some point you do get three straight down the road here. You get three straight somewhere along the way at home in the conference or something like that. So it's close. You get it figured out.
You know, well, let me say this to you. We've had teams in the past where I could look at my schedule and say, okay, I feel like, you know, we're going to be okay here. We're going to be okay here, Chief. I'm worrying about being prepared for tonight.
There you go.
Okay. I got you.
I'm going to leave you now our new question that we're asking every head coach in the league, regardless of sport. Leonard Hamilton, when it's time to get absolutely juiced up and ready to go, what is your walk on music? What gets you absolutely in the spirit and in the mood for game day?
Yeah.
What's the song? And if anybody can answer this question, it's the music man himself.
That's exactly right.
So what's the answer to the question?
Nobody in the world enjoys listening to good music, especially gospel music, more than I do. But on game day, I have no rituals. I'm in the moment. I'm staying focused all day. I don't have any rituals that I do, any music that I listen to. I don't have any of that. And that's just not – I always felt that those were crutches. And I wanted to be prepared every day, and I didn't want to have to use anything else other than what's in my heart, in my mind, in my soul. And so I kind of – if I'm superstitious about anything – I just try to stay focused and bring it every day so I don't have to get juiced up on game day.
All right, so what's your favorite song?
Oh, my God. I don't really have a favorite song. Really.
You know,
I mean,
in terms I say you keep no, – hey, listen, if you keep this up, this will be the 11th and final appearance. I mean, I thought this was the easiest question in the history of Packers.
Especially
Durham
for you.
To talk music with Leonard Hamilton, and you've given us the Heisman pose twice.
Okay, listen to me. What I like from a music standpoint, and I don't, YouTube probably has been my biggest issue because I watch it all the time. I love watching original gospel programs or programs at the church over in the little small church over in the backwoods, and they're having a celebration for the Ursha Board or for the so-and-so choir or for some fundraiser. I enjoy just the natural, live, passionate way that people worship and when it's live. So mm-hmm. It's not as much the individual songs that I like, you know. It's as much about the atmosphere and the passion that people are worshiping in. Like, I really enjoy listening to this people who just seem to be in the moment, and you know they're practicing, and they got their uniforms on, and they got the microphone, and they're walking up down the aisles. That's what I enjoy doing. So it's not as much the song, it's just the atmosphere of what I enjoy, looking to people, listening to people worship.
The true spirit. That's what you're talking about. True spirit, my man. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Rooting for you. You'll get that thing turned around. We look forward to it, man.
All right, buddy.
Take care.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Ham. Appreciate it. Leonard Hamilton, head coach at Florida State.
Tremendous.
Back to the phones with Leonard Hamilton.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. In case you missed it, we've had all the newbies on this week. Cristobal.
Yeah.
Elko.
Fact.
And Tony Elliott.
Yeah. You're right. We got a lot going on, too. Tony Elliott sets the table for us now. We had Cristobal earlier. Leonard Hamilton just joined us. And Dave Clawson is moments away on this program. He's just wrapped up. They just announced their signing class. How in the world are you? It's not even 9 o'clock.
It's busy. ACC Coach of the Year doesn't mess around.
Shoot, they're getting it done. We started our visit with Tony Elliott yesterday, just talking about how all this happened. The last few days had to have been a whirlwind.
Actually, 2 days on the job here in Charlottesville, and it feels like I've already been here a year. Everything's moving so fast, and the days are long. But the process was kind of how I envisioned it would be, having an opportunity to really think things out. You know, for me, it was always about confirmation in the right place, and in the process, the way that it played out was confirmation for me. So it's an exciting time. I look forward to the excitement and the challenges ahead. But it's been a whirlwind. And Coach Ballin told me something a long time ago that you never know what it's like until you're on the other side of the table. And now I'm starting to realize exactly what he was talking about.
You know, you've had opportunities in the past to become a head coach at fill in the blank. Why Virginia?
You guys know me well, and I've been very patient, looking for the right opportunity. Wanted to be in a situation where education was the most important thing, first and foremost, and what better place than University of Virginia with the world-class academics. I wanted to be in a situation where there was complete alignment from top to bottom, and it was centered around development of the student-athlete, first and foremost, and then, you know, an expectation to win at the highest level. Wanted to be able to go and recruit high character, exceptional young men that are going to be, you know, world-class leaders moving forward. And then also wanted to be in a situation where I can be a contributor to helping to change the narrative in college football and bring it back to being student-athlete centered and focused and proving that you can win at the highest level, but you can do it while achieving excellence in academics, leadership, and service.
Tony, there is an idea about, you mentioned the alignment. There was a lot going on at Virginia last week. I mean, not only was the story being written about you and the potential for the job, there was also this Board of Visitors vote for an allotment of money that would be used for football facilities. It seemed like a lot was going into the football program at Virginia in a very short time span. How much did that or did that not contribute to ultimately your decision?
You know, the facilities aspect is important, but it wasn't, you know, essential to my decision. The biggest thing for me was being able to have quality time to establish a relationship with the AD. And Carla is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And we immediately had a connection, but we were able to have, you know, those difficult conversations to really, really challenge each other to make sure that the alignment was true and genuine. And so for me, that was the most important part of the process. And yes, it's great that there is a renewed commitment to the facilities and the infrastructure at Virginia. But we all know, and you've been around, bricks mm-hmm. and mortar are important. But at the end of the day, it's the alignment and it's everybody pulling in the same direction. And that's what was the most refreshing thing about this process for me. And it was also the confirmation that I needed to know that this is the right place for me.
Tony, I know tomorrow is National Signing Day, but you've already got the biggest signee, and that is that Brennan Armstrong decided, hey, you know what? I'm coming back to play more football. As you all know, being an offensive guy, having that quarterback makes a world of difference.
Oh, definitely. And I'm excited to get to know him, you know, on a deeper level. Just my general impressions and thoughts about him is outstanding young man, very high character individual. In my limited time around him and the team, man, you can see everybody is just drawn to him. He galvanizes people. So I'm excited. So obviously, unbelievable talent with a tremendous amount of success so far in his career. But most important thing is you can tell that he's a quarterback and he's a leader of the team. And when you have a guy like that, when your best player is your hardest worker, then you have a chance to be successful.
DNA do you think you and Venables take to Oklahoma and Virginia, and how much of that growth plate do you expect Dabo's coaching tree to expand with what you guys learned working on that successful trip?
Well, great question. So first, you know, I was 22 years old when I first met Coach Sweeney. I already had my degree. And so a lot of the foundational pieces of who I am were already in place. And the beautiful thing is that we shared, you know, many of those same foundational pieces. So a lot of who I was already aligned with who he is. And so that's just, you know, so awesome that we were able to spend so many years together just continuing to cultivate, you know, those values. There's going to be, you know, some imprints that you're going to see. But what I told, you know, the team and everybody here is I'm not trying to make Virginia Clemson. You know, I want to make Virginia the best version of Virginia. And so Virginia's brand is unique, it's distinct, and it's different. And that's what we're going to build upon. Now, there's going to be some processes and some different things that I'll put in place. And so it's going to have, you know, some imprints. But at the end of the day, we're going to build Virginia to what Virginia is supposed to be.
Coach, I know that we had Coach Pry on last week, and he was just named as, of course, at Virginia Tech. And you're going to see him eyeball to eyeball a bunch. It just seems for both schools, both University of Virginia and Virginia Tech, recruiting in-state has got to be a priority. As you well know, it's a state that really produces big-time talent, and it's been poached by everybody and their brother in recent years. I would assume that's got to be a priority as maybe priority number one for UVA from a recruiting perspective.
Definitely, and I heard Coach Cristobal earlier talk about it, and you hear it a lot in college football, but the inside-out mentality. And so it starts here in the Commonwealth. You know, we got to make sure that we do a great job of reestablishing the relationships, you know, with the high school coaches and make them know that they are a priority. And a lot of it is, too, is making sure that we get these young men on campus and get them to understand, you know, what it means to be from the state of Virginia and have an opportunity to put your state on the map and to carry that forward. And so definitely it's going to be be a huge priority. But at the same time, too, understanding that there's a unique fit, you know, here at the University of Virginia, because of all the things that I told you attracted me to this outstanding place. So we're going to do a great job of building relationships and make sure that the guys that fit and the guys that want to come to Virginia have an opportunity.
I think Tony Elliott is off to a pretty good start. I think getting a job in this climate and this landscape right now is difficult when you got to kind of set everything back up, right? Bronco Mendenhall did a great job of culture, but this is a hard time to move through this thing right now. I mean, just so many moving parts.
Well, the timing is of the essence, right? But it's so impossible. There's never a good time when the coaching change. But I'll tell you this. I've known that guy for a while.
Yep.
He's impressive, and Virginia has found themselves a terrific dude to lead their program.
There you go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.